It seems like it's okay. Test, test.
Thank you. Well, hi to each of you and welcome. I'm Dave Krueger. I look forward to our collaboration together to talk about some of the aspects of coaching transitions, especially that have to do with mind, brain, and behavior strategies that can help inform our coaching. I got the registration late, so you may not have seen this email. I sent around an email asking questions, a couple of questions, to take a moment to respond. What's the most important question you want answered during this seminar series? And secondly, if you were to walk away saying this is one of the best series and it specifically met your needs, what would you walk away with? And notice those also are the two questions at either end of the coaching story each time with a client. What do you want to focus on? Where do you want to get to? The two coordinates of a map, where you are, where you want to go, and that can help determine not only deter and distraction, but measure progress. So I particularly am interested in your thoughts and your questions about this, and I will take into account the things that you mention and wrap it into these discussions. The outline that you have, that you hopefully printed from the web page you got when you registered, that has the outline, some pages and work pages and exercises, as well as playback. So I'm interested in your input, your questions and responses to that, and I'll work it into our discussion. I want to reserve just a bit of time at the beginning and the end of each of our seminars to take any questions, clarifications, any input that you have. Would anyone like to offer now an answer to either or both of those questions? The most important thing to focus on and to walk away with in this whole this subject area. Anyone? Well, I encourage you.
It's Martha.
Yeah, please go ahead. Hi. I saw yours.
Yeah,
I just didn't have a chance to read it.
That's why. I was just, it's front of my mind because I just sent it about 30 seconds ago.
Ah, okay. All right, great.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Basically,
in
terms of
something or ask?
Sure. Most important question to me is, in a sense, how to recognize when is the time to make the shift from sort of appreciating, recognizing the past and then moving towards the new story. So like the idea of transition, you sort of got one foot in the past and you're moving towards the future. You know, how much of that, you know, when do you know when to like let go of the old chores?
Okay. Here's a précis of coming attractions. All of our focus, both feet, are in the present moment and the choice architecture of our collaboration at this moment with the client, and to look at the framework of collaboration and specifically at how we can help a client create the choices and the ways of proceeding that will be beneficial. Because no exploration of the past is going to be useful in coaching. We'll leave that to my former profession, psychiatry, psychoanalysis, and deal only with the present moment, because whatever we think and feel and experience, we create this moment. Now, knowing that our minds and brains prefer the default mode and to repeat the past, this is where we're listening together with a client, hopefully, for the process of how they're using their prior experiences in this moment and this focus, and to help them collaboratively look at making that choice of now and next. And that process is something we're going to explore in full detail. So does that make sense as a kind of a heads up for where we're going for that answer, Martha?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
Okay, great. Yeah, great question. Super question, actually. And we will definitely come back to that. Anyone else to add or ask or give us a focus for what you may be interested in. Well, I'll put us on. I'll come back at the end and have an open mic discussion. I'm going to put us on lecture mode at this point, so that you don't have to worry about background management of noise. And you guys are doing a great job right now. I don't even hear anybody breathing, so that's terrific. So hold on. I'll put us on lecture mode. Okay, we're going to be talking about initially the dynamics and developmental stages of change and transition. Now, a big secret here, there is not one of your clients for whom this does not and will not apply. Every client, and you as well, will go through changes, transitions. And you'll see this again and again. You'll see this in the process and in the content. We'll talk about all that. So first, let's look at the dynamics and developmental steps of change and then of transition. So first, what's your story? When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories, maybe of childhood, families, what's important to us professionally. When we know people well, we know their stories, what shaped and molded them, trials and turning points that have tested them. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experiences, a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, and will go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. This is what we're listening for with our client, is what's their story. Present time, looking at where they want us together to focus. And a good story is never more necessary than at the time of change and transition. That's basically unsettling, confusing, uncertain, insecure. The ability to craft a good present story at this crucial time is really significant to the success of everything that follows. We learn through stories. We use stories to understand, to make sense of things. And to remember, a good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we are and how we craft our immediate next steps. And a critical element of our well-being is how we understand what happens to us and why. And that's passive language. And if you hear that from a client, you immediately can do my Dutch Uncle intervention of, as I heard it, whatever you think and feel and experience, you're creating. Nothing happens to you. Some approaches derail because they attempt to change someone's behavior without considering what it does to their personal stories and the bedrock of that, their identity. So let's look first at the dynamics of change. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, or change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. So first, the idea of change can create a particular kind of anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, a trepidation. Even anxiety, because you're breaking the script to do something other than exactly what your repetition and your default mode says. Every client that you have who takes one step into a new and different experience will have this. And I think it's important for us as coaches to understand this, because we're going to be actively, whenever it's useful and timely, to help our clients frame their present experience in a correct and present way. For example, whenever our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. So if we frame a new experience as anxiety, That means danger of some sort. Better head for cover. It makes sense to stop. Or we can frame it as an anticipation, excitement, and look at possibilities. So this is the choice architecture of that present moment. So as soon as a client says, well, the problem is, I'll interrupt that client to say, let's look at the possibilities. Or as soon as they re-enter that old story, we together, hopefully, will create a collaborative alliance to look at now and next, because that's the possibility here. So next, if you continue rather than return to a comfort zone, there's expansion into a new experience. And then finally, mastery. There are a couple of additional aspects of change that can seem paradoxical. And this discussion is for us as coaches. This is not something that I would suggest conceptualizing with a client about their story. They're not in a story. It's the way things are for them. It can help us to look at tools and methods and principles and a process of how to understand and help. But a couple of things in this regard. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Somebody has to mourn. They have to say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. And this is a process. It's a developmental step. It's not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. This is where the brain science comes in, because departing from the default mode means there's some discomfort and you're crafting a new way of proceeding. Every step forward is different. Maybe anxiety-provoking, but it can be framed as validation that you're in new territory beyond where you've been before. And it can be like saying goodbye to an old friend to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or a hope that just by getting the old story right, even doing it better, will work. And the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. Now, this carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity at bedrock, can be replaced by something better. And you think, man, I could have done this all along. What if I knew that? So I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. And these are not headlines. These are not things that you'll see signs and you can label. But this is just for our conceptualization as coaches, for your reflection, and to think about maybe as some conceptual markers. The myth that there's a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment, ultimately, that nothing's perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. And the scientific term for that is adulthood. The development, the recognition that nobody's going to take care of you. Also another component of adulthood. The growth to take the next best action to create that effectiveness. And the consolidation. The happy, sad combination that results. Happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle to move ahead, and sad about mourning an old story, like an old part of the self. Every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. Agnes Allen, American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career, for example, may ironically cause a similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship. The reason it's important to recognize this is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but from the resonance with similar situations in the past. Letting go is difficult. Herodotus, Greek historian, 5th century BC, said this, "Diseases most always attack men when they are exposed to change." Even when we look forward to change, even when we anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on to what used to be. That's because it's in our brains. It's an anatomical reality, just like a belief or an experience. We still hold on to what we used to be, what we wonder whether the change is a good or bad idea. We're defined and define ourselves by our roles and relationships, those we like, and even ones we don't. So letting go is an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating this passage, a new framework, separating the old from the new. The characteristic ways of coping with endings may need to be understood more carefully. And each person has his or her own style of ending and new beginning. Now, I'm talking about just a little bit of observational difference. I'm not talking inside your client's mind right now. And that framework is always important. So where are we standing as an observer? So some characteristic reactions to ending. Four of the most common styles of ending. Abrupt. It's designed to deny the impact and the meaning of change. Before you even notice that person, they're out of here. Slow or gradual, so that it's difficult to see that anything important is really happening. An external focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act on them when change is in the air. And finally, active or passive, whether it's proactive or reactive. Some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. She just walked out on me. No warning, no nothing. She just left me. Like someone who shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive, who calls attention and makes everybody look suspicious. How you approach change comes from the style you develop for dealing with endings. That style is likely to reflect early experience as well as later influence and be consistent over time and situation. But it's likely not a conscious choice or a game plan. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern, as with other important losses in the past. One person feels the grief and anxiety for the entire group. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over the routine responsibility. And another assumes control for the situation. These are default roles that probably have been around a long time. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. Now, we're not talking just about big endings here. Divorce, career transition, job loss, children leaving for college, retirement. Even the small endings have their own personality that can be consistent with the big endings. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave and kind of delay the ending? Do you suddenly say it was a nice evening and abruptly dash off? Do you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of plan so you don't have to say those goodbyes? Notice how small and large endings can be the same. Leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, like leaving a dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the person who stays late both avoid endings in their own way and the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer share similar dynamics. There are things we don't want to happen, we don't want to happen, but we have to accept. Things we don't want to know, but we have to learn. People we can't live without, but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. So, and this is in your outline, here are some principles of letting go. accept the reality as well as the importance of the subjective losses, of the meaning of the loss. Acknowledge the loss openly. Accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction comes because there are emotional impacts of the loss that are the unique signature of each person experiencing it, as well as past experiences of losses of that person that get resonated with. Expect and accept the process of grief. And each of the five stages, they're never in order and never as clear as for the purpose of discussion: anger, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, and then disorientation and confusion. Compensate for the losses, but not too quickly. Ask, what can I give back to balance what has been taken away or lost? What can I do for myself first? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. 6, define what's over and what isn't over. Mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. When Rene McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules that nobody could remember, and most didn't even know all of them. In a management meeting, his first management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a large conference table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. He then pushed them to the floor and held up a single piece of paper on which the corporate principles were typed. He said, "These are our new operating rules and game plan." 8, treat the past with respect. 9, consider taking a piece of the old story with you. 10, endings ensure the continuity of what really matters, and the past, the good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at others. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they have ever experienced before. The transition process by which people can get through change is a system that I want us to map, not how to, but to look at the principles, the guidelines, how our minds and brain work, what we can do to facilitate and be a catalyst for our clients. So let's look now at the dynamics of transition. We've just talked about change. Let's look at transition. The change event is the snapshot. The change process is the wide-angle view. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. The transition is the process of the internal story of change. It's a shift in orientation, even self-definition. Transition is awareness of the seasonal changes while attending to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you gradually let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. You transform a new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. It's analogous to a principle from performance neuroscience. I work some with performance professionals, actors, sports people. And to learn, you also have to unlearn. You got to make room for it. You don't engage the past. You engage the present, even with its uncertainty. So every learning involves a form of unlearning, same with this process. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present and foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today, and the person you will be tomorrow, only more so. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned, and along with them, an aspect of the self and identity left behind. You also have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve perhaps new relationships, but they can also involve new places or projects. For some, it can begin with a state of mind, a new feeling, a self-image, or a goal, or, as you've experienced, professional training to be a professional mentor coach. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort, but sometimes important new beginnings have a mysterious and maybe even accidental quality to them. Although we think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully to start again after an ending, some important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Here's an example of someone I know quite well. 2 years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston, where I live, to catch the sunset. One of the premier measures of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets I'm at the ranch on the porch with a cigar and a single malt. You don't want to know all these things about me, watching the sunset over the lake and trees and writing. But I decided, for some unknown reason, to stay for the social hour at this writer's conference Saturday, when I could have been already partway to my sunset. There, I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on that porch I didn't get to that evening for sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. That was almost 20 years ago. Now, without a transition, change simply rearranges the future. People imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes, such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, developing new interests. Yet the challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for that transition. A buddy of mine and I have done weekend retreats called What's Next Exec for people who are CEOs or own their own businesses who plan within the next year or so to retire. And they happen to know, as we certainly do, that this is not just a change, that they need to prepare for this. And when they recognize it, they're eager to begin a whole weekend conference working on that change and transition, and with other people who are doing similar things. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their story, life, business, otherwise, and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of a business story to create a new one. At times, rituals and transitions further the process of transition. Rituals and celebrations, I should say, further the process of transition and can also serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for change and transition deserve attention. Transition is a process. It takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to have a baby. So there are three components of transition. First, there's an ending. Then a neutral zone, an important, probably directionless time in between, filled with mourning, maybe work, maybe getting ready. Then you finish with a new beginning. Let's look at each of these three steps so that you may be able to help your client sort of look at, understand, and see this as a process that can inform you. One is the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first. Willingly or unwillingly, an ending. So the first task is to really let go. This is not an event, usually. It's a process. Whether the individual or organizational level, whether the source of transition is external change or internal development, the transactions always begin with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now, and that's a process. The most common mistake is simply to add a new pattern to the ones that are already existing. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. And think about that for just a moment, because transitioned, we're talking about a whole emotional development and lifetime of information that are a component, not necessarily consciously. Those of you who have worked and trained with me before, you've heard this many times. 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. This is where we can help our clients tremendously to listen to and help the client understand the entire process of understanding, of engagement, of change, and making that change permanent. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by a divorce or job loss, and another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, yet be demolished by the loss of a pet. Here's one dramatic way to mark an ending. This is only one style, but it happened to work. And you probably know this story. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead. They knew the danger, and they were on the verge of mutiny. Some had called it hopeless. Faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries and dangers, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. Cortes burned the ships. So, here are some components of the ending process. There are essentially five aspects, and these are not in order, but I need to talk about them more linearly, okay? One is disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which someone has known themselves, divorce, death, job change, move, illness. The disengagement begins a process of change. Another is dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual practices are taken apart a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves slowly unpacking the lost relationship, including the lost identity that's part of it. Now, this is the client's work, not your work together in coaching, because you're focusing on the present. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but yet not the new way as this dismantling occurs. And here's the sidebar caveat that we will return to. Some experiences for each client, and you've had this experience yourself, are unprecedented, meaning they're is no existing mental model or set of mental models to synthesize experience and conclusions, even inform intuition, because you're using, for this present situation, old software. We'll come back to that. Three, disidentification. To end connections with what used to be, you lose an old way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. I still miss some of them. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are or who they thought they would be. I thought about this a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice of teaching psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become an executive mentor coach. For 25 years of practice and 7 years prior to that of medical school, residency, I identified with being a doctor. I wondered then, and I still wonder a little bit now, if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it, or even if it would turn off some potential clients. I don't want to shrink working with me. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as transformation and self-renewal. I'm saying these things for you to listen to your clients in a maybe slightly different way. Four, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that, in some sense, your world is indeed no longer simply the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience through the lifetime of the one who's had the courage to trust and believe in the first place. Some significant transitions begin with disenchantment. Maybe the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person deals with this as a developmental step and moves on. The disillusioned person can go through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go of the old framework. New faces on the same character. A new face on the same 1,000 women, as Catherine Ann Porter said. Five, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of space, place, as well as time. The usual way of structuring time even changes. The future is unclear. These elements of ending are not in sequence or any particular order at all. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which leads to disengagement. If you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disengagement and becomes disoriented. That's 1-4-5. So there's no normal or natural order to the sequence. You really have to listen to your client. Nor is there any normal order of reactions to an ending. So don't fit your client into a Procrustean bed of what they should do. Endings are the first, not the last, act of the play. Notice that only the first, disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. The second, dismantling, can be either internal or external. The last three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, those are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to a past. Yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, to leave the relationship, the job, to move across the country. The focus uses change to avoid transition. To storm out of a job because of a bad boss rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses. To end another relationship, rather than letting go of the behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes that kept choosing the same people and repeating the same relationship. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? After someone struggles initially with the change, then begins to grapple with the transition, this is the true work, the beginning of the transformation. So we're at the mid-phase, the neutral zone. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or relationship, even an identity. The real challenge can be the time of nothingness that awakens old fears about abandonment and death. Nothing's the same. You're in a new situation. It's unprecedented. You don't have the default mode or even familiar models to fall back on. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect this as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. You can reframe this return to the familiar as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. This in-between time of transformation is the real work of letting go and prepares the foundation for the next stage. It's important, I believe, to not rush through this neutral zone too quickly in order to avoid or minimize the disruption. It's a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in my mind and heart, and I would be tempted to revert to that identity and style of being or working if I was in doubt about my new endeavor, which is why I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from my medical practice and close that out in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch riding, physically working, before I began training for certification as a professional coach. Now, in another era, the person in transition left the village and went into a forest or desert to remain for a time, removed from old connections and without old identities. The old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered a generation, the generation of a new sense of self. So actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized at the time. And this is from the New York Times Review of Books. Gregory Kalb said, "If your marriage fails, you go for a long walk in the woods." It takes me a lot, much longer time to say things as he just did very succinctly. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time to create a transition, some important work can be avoided. If transition is treated as an event, like crossing a street, a whole necessary process is averted. Often someone, without even quite knowing why, find ways of being alone and away from familiar distractions. Sometimes it's a long weekend, alone in a quiet place, having the time to think things over and not do much of anything. That's the point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that someone after the age of 40, people transition automatically from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate competence, to create effectiveness, to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning. Once they've got the initial phase down, to find personal meaning in work and its results. This is a shift from the question of how to the question of why. Competence begins to lose its force as a source of motivation. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating. Now, the brain also plays a role in this process. Dopamine is the brain chemical, as you know, that induces excitement by anticipating a pleasure or reward, by simply wondering what's next. The rush from dopamine release motivates people to take risk, and this risk can be exciting, which adds further to the dopamine release. But neuroscientists have shown us that anticipating a reward is even more exciting than actually receiving it. Why? Because receiving a reward shuts down this anticipatory release of dopamine, and along with it, these positive feelings and high energy. The brain shifts to another motivational system that's mediated, or processing system, mediated by norepinephrine primarily, the chemical system of marathons, not the dopamine of sprints. This explains the paradox that the expectation of an event can be more exciting than the actual event. So this has been demonstrated in a number of ways. An investor will feel more positive when they expect a stock to rise, yet not feel as excited when it actually does rise. The purchase of a big-ticket item, a new car, isn't as excited as expected, and this shift in systems can read as buyer's remorse at times. Or clients can hit plateaus in coaching after a couple of months and consider suspending work because this anticipation has shifted to the maintenance. This is where we need to keep this in mind, to consider incremental change toward the client's goal. We can return to that. So what we can do in coaching is to foster attitudes that promote creativity, openness, introducing new learning, for example, to ladder challenges and successes. And by knowing this phenomenon, we can address it and even do a peremptory strike by causing this to be, this awareness to be part of our structure. Two questions focus on the meaning of transition at a particular time in life. One, what is the time to let go of my current situation or life right now? Transition starts with letting go. An important distinction between a challenge and transition is that change is focused on reaching a goal. Transition began with letting go of what no longer fits the life or the plan that you have. Each person had to figure out what no longer fits. It's usually internal rather than external. It can be either. The transition begins with letting go of something that you may have assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself, some outlook or attitude toward others. And two, what is waiting to make its entrance into your life? The answer is usually something internal, something subjective, often in shape of an idea or question you ask yourself. It may feel like a message to you that something is standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. So we have to deal with endings all of our lives, yet curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they're simply the first phase of a transition process, a necessary precondition for self-renewal, among other things. So at the same time we may fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we may even try to avoid them. And I saw this in therapy and analytic practice. It applies also to coaching. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but the failure to internalize that person and relationship. Same with any process that you say goodbye to. For some, a present consists at least in part of a past they've not quite let go of. An illustration of this emptiness in this neutral zone is Leo Tolstoy's description. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped, and yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was if someone wicked and stupid was jesting and playing with me. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? So the reasons for this emptiness between the old life and the new may include the process of transformation is essentially a death and rebirth rather than a mechanical modification. The process of disengagement and reintegration is a source of renewal, just the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter. The emptiness between the stages of a life journey provide a perspective on the experiences themselves. The emptiness is the perspective. This in-between time provides access to a view, another perspective, that can occur nowhere else. So here's a brief summary of the creative use of this neutral zone, because I want to get to the final stage and then have to have a little bit of discussion time. So embrace setbacks and losses and disadvantages to frame them as entry points into a new situation. Maybe establish a regular time and place to be alone, to reflect, to come up with new and creative solutions. Provide opportunities for others important in your change and transformation to be aware of this with you. Accept your need for this time in a neutral zone. make your experience important. It's not a pause and avoidance. It's a hard work mid-phase time. It's a process, not an event. Engage in training and techniques, perhaps, of discovery and innovation. Take this opportunity to discover what you really want, perhaps. Engage in experimentation. Try out ideas that you wished you'd have time to try. Maybe keep a record, a log of neutral zone experiences. It can kind of serve maybe as a map. Take this pause in the action of your life, maybe to reflect on it, even write about it, maybe even an autobiography. Nobody has to read it except you. Think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. 10, reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your life, the neutral zone, the time between the old and the new. It's a rich time for insight. And finally, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, even aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete, and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when it's an unprecedented experience, a genuinely new beginning. For a time, we may not even know which is the real path. We may lose the scent of the trail. I know these things. Think about the important beginnings in your own past. You bumped into an old friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job in his company that opened up that morning. You met your spouse at a wine event, at a writer's conference you really hadn't wanted to go to and almost skipped and missed a sunset for. You picked up a book that changed your life because it was the one lying on a friend's coffee table when you dropped by for an unexpected experience. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will find and create an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we're aligned with deep longings, a sense of purpose, a true north, when needs and ideals align with purpose. This is one thing in the outline. There are some work tools and exercises. The one I would suggest you do is the needs and ideals exercise. It's one that I have many, in fact, most clients do as the beginning of a work in mentor coaching so that we're both clear about their needs and their ideals, and we can plan to create strategies and goals, a trajectory that fits with and incorporates their needs and ideals, and that makes progress, strategies, and achievement goals really a dynamite. All of them is going in the same direction. So every step forward will also set off an inner warning system, the brain's error detection mechanism, that will read as something's wrong. This is not a signal to retreat to an old way of being, even though it will make you immediately comfortable. Never underestimate the change back pressure from your brain and your software, from the system, from your family, from your company. It's in their self-interest a reaction to change, because it's the way their brains work too, to attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. A group or system has a status quo bias and inertia, as well as an individual. Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. Now, the important distinction can be this. Have you really moved through the endings and the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow or create? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending and abort this neutral zone experience and end this whole mishigas of change, transit. That's uncomfortable. One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? For people who process things visually, it may be to visualize the successful outcome. We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We are not wanting to move from a comfort zone. We have a grooved default mode in our minds and brains. And when we don't know the outcome, we tend to avoid it. I'm going to go ahead and finish some things here rather than have a discussion mode or time and invite you to send questions or clarification by email. I'll address them at the beginning because there are some things I want to be sure we include. So beginnings may reactivate old anxieties as well as new ones, as well as making very real the ending that's happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, maybe even trigger old memories of losses, of failures. And a new beginning will immediately erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is we have to come to the end of the past, the hope that someone else will do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was, even than what was traumatically so, because you have to give up the hope of ever having it exactly the way you wanted it. And with that, the illusion that there's an ultimate arbiter of fairness, as we talked before, called adulthood. New beginnings need to have a clear sense of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you may have to evolve a new or evolving identity that replaces the old one. In the beginning, take things step by step. Recognize the assumption and resist the temptation that some other route could go more smoothly with things more exciting or meaningful. It's like comparing yourself with someone else. You're comparing your inside to their outside. That is not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's important in a new beginning to not be preoccupied with the results as well as the past. For example, rather than each interview that does not produce a job, seeing that as a failure or framing it as mistakes, reframe the process as a stepwise movement to teach something, to create new contact, to deepen understanding of the process and of oneself. This is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. Think about how often we do that with our clients. For example, the new job is to find a job. Every transition is a transition from something into something, and it's a process. It's not an event. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes, an integration of a new identity with elements of the old one. There are many endings, many little beginnings, and each has both emptiness and creation, or some form of it in between. There are very few times we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present circumstances as they might appear in a relatively objective future self. When we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. This can contribute to looking back at our own past with a bit of alienation or disbelief, almost as if someone else had lived it, as if you're an observer. Exceptions occur at certain moments in life, perhaps prompted by the excitement of a major event, that we look ahead in time and think, I'll remember this forever. This awareness seems to change a present experience and to enhance it with a special lighting and sharp focus. So here are some considerations to reinforce a new beginning. Be consistent. Best way to get an idea of how something will work is to be consistent and totally immersed in the process. Shrink the change to ensure stepwise successes. Think of evolving a new way of seeing yourself, a new identity. Generate a symbol of this new identity, a representation that can be a consistent point of reference. Celebrate small successes. This is what we can do with our clients to help them recognize the process and the steps of change that will incorporate a transformation of a new identity and make change permanent. So in 10 or 20 years, when we look back on present time, laced among experiences will inevitably be envy and regret. The envy, the younger self, who could relatively do so much that will regret the younger self did not do more or different or better. We may wonder why we learned too little or loved too small, risked too low, spent too much time in routine and distraction. This view from a future self, looking back to the present, can be very informative. So, to end here, and I know we're out of time, so hang with me for another minute. A question and a challenge. The question. Imagine a photograph of you 100 years from now. What is the story you most want your grandchildren looking at that photograph to tell about you? It will come immediately. And here's the challenge. What if right now is a turning point for you, the time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now, the time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it, the time you did what you were always meant to do? Or this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles we're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. Send comments, questions, things you'd like to discuss further, or clarifications by email. I welcome them. And for those questions I sent around, please send them to me. I promise I'll work them into the discussion and stick sort of with the outline. So thanks for all of your responses so far. I look forward to this continued collaboration with you. Take good care of yourselves. Same time next week. See you guys. Bye now.